The following is a presentation of Project Independence and WCWP. Project Independence is the Aging in Place Initiative of the Town of North Hempstead. We provide programs and services designed to assist and support the older town residents who wish to remain in their homes as they age. If we don't currently provide a service, we will try and connect you to that service. Call 311 or 869-6311 to get more information or receive services.
Welcome to Project Independence and You.
Welcome to WCWP.org, Project Independence in You, Senior Talk Radio. I will be your guest host today, Rebecca Miller, along with our co-host, Otto Loos. How are you doing, Otto?
Good morning, Rebecca. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
As you too. And Christina Liu, who is the radio show producer extraordinaire every single show, now getting toward our 10th year, which is unbelievable. Christina does a great job. So our guest today is the Honorable Teresa Carrigan. She's the supervising judge of the county court and acting Supreme Court justice. I want to thank you so much for giving us, you know, an hour of your time. And we have a lot of questions and you've been gracious enough to answer all of them, as you told us in the beginning. And I know that Otto actually wanted to talk a little bit about how he knows you.
Well, yes. I know this young lady for quite a long time now, actually. She's one of my daughter's best friends, I would say. I have attended many basketball games with their children and other sporting events where they couldn't even reach the basket. So that's how far back it goes. And they are, both of your children now are in college, I believe.
They are.
And as is my grandson, Nick, who played ball with your son. So I just wanted to go into full disclosure about that. And my daughter actually worked with Terry. I'll call you that since, you know, the Honorable Terry, since 2012, I guess, when you were running for judge, my daughter was actually quite involved with you as a novice campaign manager, if you will. And the two of you were kind of novice at that whole thing. And you succeeded mightily. So you did a great job. And, you know, I just wanted tell people I know you and that you are a decent human being with a great family, and we can go from there, you know.
Thank you so much.
You know, you're a judge, you're also a human being, mother, homemaker, get involved with all kinds of other things, go to church. I see you in there once in a while. Not that we don't go, we just go at a different time. And so that's the story, that's the full disclosure.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Otto. And again, we're just so happy to have you here. And, you know, we were kind of talking before about, you know, the impact of COVID. I mean, COVID's hit every worldwide sector of life, from education and healthcare, and law enforcement, court, entertainment, restaurants. I mean, you could just go on and on. I don't think there's any area in life that hasn't been impacted in some way. And, you know, one of the ways we really were interested in talking to you about is how it's impacted the court system. You know, we were thinking, like, you know, what happened early on? Like, what, you know, once March came, I know for government, you know, by March 16, that was that Monday, you know, it was the Monday after Friday the 13th. I thought I'd mention how, you know, it followed Friday the 13th. We all went home. We just all started working from home. We all, you know, hunkered down. Things changed drastically, immediately, you know, from food shopping to all the things that we had to do to make sure we, you know, contain whatever we can contain this unknown at the time, you know, virus. So, but the court system seems to have to go on. I mean, it just seems, you know, there's so many things that depend on the legal system and people that are, you know, waiting on answers and hearings. So what was happening in the beginning for the court system?
First, let me just say thank you so much for having me on today. I really do appreciate it. And thank you, Otto, for that very kind introduction and disclosure. I'm very happy that you said I'm a mother and I'm a homemaker and I'm all those things first, because truly that's what I am first. Yes, I'm a judge and that's my job, but I never forget that, you know, it's family first and it always has to be family first. And then we do the best we can with the jobs we're given. So with regards to COVID and the court system, back in March, I remember it very clearly. It was March 17th and I was all decked out in my green Irish regalia for the day. And we were notified on that day that the courts would be shutting down the very next day, the 18th. But we never really actually shut down. What that meant was all of the courts of Nassau County, and there are many. So we have a family court in Nassau County. We have a matrimonial court in Nassau County. We have my court, which is the felony criminal court. We're called the county court. There's the Supreme Court that handles all civil matters. And there's a district court that handles lesser felonies plus landlord tenant, a lot of other civil courts. All five of those courts were technically shutting down. All the judges were going home, as was all of the court staff, except for the bare minimum to keep us operational. So what happened was my court building is the largest court building of the courts here in the county. So what happened was on March 18th, we moved four other courts into the county court. So overnight, we literally cleaned out courtrooms and chambers to make space for all of my colleagues so that every court would be operational out of one building. Because at that point, we weren't really up on the whole social distancing thing. That was sort of new. So we thought the best thing to do, and we got guidance from the health department, was to bring everyone together into one location, which is what we ended up doing. A big part of what happens in Nassau County, which is really not known to many people, there's a statute that does not allow many parts of the Nassau County courts to be virtual. So what we're doing right now was not authorized by law for Nassau County courts. So we couldn't just jump on to this virtual setting. We had no electronics to jump on to a virtual setting. So we needed the governor to give us permission to do that. And thankfully he did. So within a week's time, we became a fully virtual system from a system that had never even been allowed to be virtual.
So it took 1 month. It was just a month before you were all up virtually.
We were all up virtually within fully virtual within the month of March. So in those 2 weeks, but quite frankly, within a week, we were up and running. We had some equipment that we were allowed to do it right away.
Right.
But it wasn't sufficient. But within, our tech people were amazing. They had to do five courts, and they all had to do it in one building. And it was insanity, but we got it done, and barely a blip on the radar screen for the most important cases. I mean, there are people that definitely did not get their day in court in March. But the
you say virtual, was it virtual within the building or were you working out of homes?
So I came in and there was one judge from each of the five courts that came in, but the rest of the judges were home and virtual from home. So there was very few people physically in the building. I had myself, a clerk, two clerks. We had the head clerk here who was responsible for the entire building. We had a couple of support staff, but the idea was to have as few people as possible physically in the building, and everyone was going virtual from home.
Now, when you have felonies and there's a criminal involved who may be in a jail somewhere, they normally would be transported to a court. How did you work that out? Were you able to see the prisoners virtually?
So initially, because the jail did not have virtual capabilities, again, because it wasn't authorized by law for Nassau County, And just as an aside, once the executive orders go away, if the legislature doesn't pick up this topic, we can't do it again. Mm-hmm. But with the executive order in place, we eventually got equipment into the jail. So by the third week to the fourth week of March, we were able to see all of those prisoners virtually, but for a short period of time, we had to produce them, which was likewise problematic. We didn't want to produce them. The jail was having a spike like everybody was having a spike.
Do you think that the elimination of transporting prisoners might happen because now you can all of a sudden virtually see the prisoner? You know what I'm saying? I know there's a whole big deal about transporting prisoners. Who does it? And, you know, it's a costly proposition and all of the above.
Right.
What do you visualize as the future for that?
So we can't completely eliminate transportation of prisoners to the court system, especially in the criminal, obviously in the felony criminal world. The statutes and the Constitution is written that they are entitled to face-to-face confrontations with their accusers. So we can't wipe that away. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn has probably for close to 20 years now, they've had virtual prisoner production in a courtroom forever. They were a pilot project when I was an assistant district attorney in Brooklyn. So they've been doing it forever. Again, Nassau County doesn't even have the legal right to do it except for the governor's executive order, unless the statute changes. So it will never be completely wiped away. And if that executive order goes away, we won't be able to do it, even though we know it's now beneficial for certain things. It's beneficial for a conference. It's beneficial for, you know, just discussing the case, but there's not going to be any sort of hearing. There's not going to be a trial. It's very beneficial to have the ability to have the prisoner produced virtually. And a lot of times the prisoners want to be produced virtually because otherwise they have to get up at 5 a.m. to get ready to be in court for 9:30. So it's a good thing if we can make it happen, but it cannot happen on a regular basis for hearings and trials because the statute and the Constitution gives them the right to face-to-face in-person confrontation.
And also speedy trial, right? They have the right to.
Unfortunately, speed is a word we're going to put in quotes right now. Yes, they're entitled to a speedy trial. The governor's executive orders have somewhat put that on hold. Speedy trial time only kicked in again for the court system on November 4th.
You know what? We're going to come back to that. We have to take a short break right now, and we'll revisit this when we return. You've been listening to Project Independence on You, Senior Talk Radio on WCWP.org. We'll be right back.